The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Morning, folks. We are presented by BetMGM. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel, not Gil Alexander, obviously, filling in for the day. The motley crew of hosts continue for the week. I'll be in for today and tomorrow. Got a good show on tap for you today, though. Jonathan Davis, host of Ice Cap Series XM NHL, is going to be with us coming up in 30 minutes from now. I like advanced analytics a lot, and it does really help paint a picture of a lot of things that I don't really pay deep attention to, like the NHL. And I thought there were some interesting takeaways from the games last night from an analytics standpoint that we'll discuss with Jonathan coming up at the 30-minute mark. Next hour, Raheem Palmer, the Ringer, old buddy of mine out in Philly. We'll discuss a lot when it comes to the 76ers and I guess we want to call it an effort that they put out there yesterday against the Boston Celtics and Jordan Sherwood at 8:30 p.m. Pacific time. Henry Cejudo back in the octagon. Got to get his thoughts on what is going to transpire this weekend at UFC 288. With that, we begin with what happened last night. And as Kelly Bidlin, the producer extraordinaire, nice enough to note, and I think this was all of us, got to turn in a little bit early yesterday if you weren't taking in the hockey, because this one was a snoozer. 121-87. Celtics come out, win, cover a 7.5-point favorites. A game does go under the total, which we can discuss that angle coming up here in a little bit. But I think, look, there's a couple of things that come from this. First off, those who really enjoy trends, this fills in the trend of team or higher-seeded team losing game one at home, coming back in game two with a very strong effort winning and covering. But also, Kelly, I'll ask you this. One of the big takeaways for me last night is obviously the change in defense, right? Boston comes out. Their defense in the previous five games have been absolutely abysmal. Defensive rating well over 120. He looked nothing like the team that closed out the regular season, the team that was during the regular season, or the team that made it to the NBA Finals. But a defensive rating of 92.9. How about this, to give you an idea of how that game went yesterday? Garbage time, all of the fourth quarter. It was an absolute slobber knocker. And if you're looking at it from the perspective of how Boston defended, the key thing going forward in this series, if you're not going to give up a lot of free throw attempts to this Philly team, specifically to Joel Embiid, you're going to be in a pretty good position. Embiid only went to the free throw line 8 times in the game yesterday. Harden only got to the free throw line 10 times. The shooting was not there at all for Harden. Spent it all in game one, 2 of 14, 0 of 6 from three-point range. But that, for me, was the key takeaway, is the Boston Celtics' ability to defend and their ability to defend without fouling, and the ability, I think, I think this team is so uniquely equipped to take on Philadelphia, because they have two bodies they're comfortable with, throwing on Joel Embiid and living with one-on-one results in Al Horford and Robert Williams. It's why I've got under 5.5 in this series, and I think I'm still pretty live here. I don't think it's unthinkable that the Celtics come in and rip off 4 straight wins, but what was your takeaway yesterday? Because I thought that was the biggest one, right? It's defense, and it's defense without fouling.
Yeah, you and I on Hardwood Handicappers have talked a lot about that Celtics defense, you know, off of game one and kind of what it's looked like this entire playoff. So, yeah, I'm with you. That was it. And this game was, I mean, look, it was done and dusted pretty much by halftime, right? They rolled in that third quarter, then outscored Philly 35-16, really opened it up there. But, yeah, man, like, you're able to win a game like that. Jason Tatum, if we walked in today, I told you Tatum had 7 points. This is Joel Embiid played and Jason Tatum had 7 points. We're probably thinking this is a little bit different result, but man, just I think a very, very much increased defensive effort from the Boston Celtics last night to a level that we saw them playing like at the end of the regular season.
So can we hear from Joe Mazzulla first? Because Mazzulla had a pretty interesting press conference. And look, this is one result. Wouldn't really get carried away with getting smart with the media. But here's Mazzulla after the game kind of sarcastically asking about, hey, you guys don't have any questions for me about something?
Nobody wants to ask about all the adjustments we made from game one and game two.
The walk off.
So here's the thing.
I feel like it's directed right at me.
Right. Well, it's obviously directed at the media, right? Because everybody was talking about, hey, look, Joe Mazzulla, we got some questions. But I wish nobody would let him walk off, because I think you would follow up with like, hey, Joe, like, well, the larger sample size says you guys actually struggle in clutch time, and clutch time means that, you know, coaching and plays and being able to see what's going to happen in a half court setting. Like, you still have those issues. And this is kind of so I talked about this on one of the NBA bet streams that I got to do, right? And like, all of the numbers would point to the Celtics being like a really dominant team. But my question, I was on there with Matt Moore of the Action Network and a couple of the guys from DraftKings. We've got to talk to him, Shrog Hero, one of them. And my question was, how much do you think the way the Celtics play creates noise in the metrics. And what I meant by it was they're a team that takes a lot of threes, right? They take over 40% of their attempts from three. And when the Celtics win, they tend to win relatively easily, right? I mean, you look at this game, you look at the first two games of the Atlanta series where everybody thought the Hawks were going to get swept. They absolutely crushed them. But then when you see them lose these games, it's games that they have an opportunity to win that they don't really close out. And I wonder the dominance of all these metrics we see for the Boston Celtics are kind of clouded by noise that, hey, we're a high variance team when it comes to results because of the way that we play offense. So tying this back to Missoula, like, it's funny that you want to walk off and say, like, nobody wants to talk about adjustments. Well, I think that's going to come up again when you're talking about a team that takes over 40% of their attempts from threes. And when those shots aren't falling, what does it look like for you? Right? Like, that's, I think, a really big issue for Boston. And I don't know, like, I get it. You feel good after splitting home court and after what happened in game one, but wouldn't be as cocky as Joe Mazzulla walking off there and feeling like, take that, media. You know?
I thought it was something after just one game, basically. And there's going to be plenty more opportunities, I think, for you to prove yourself, Mazzulla, and then have those kind of comments. Because we talked a lot about their defense and in the poor effort, really, after game one. And we didn't necessarily put it all on Mazzulla, but it was I think there were some inbounds plays questions that I brought up. It was some concerns with him. And the only thing I said after game one, GVT, is there's a big difference between coaching in the regular season and the playoffs, right? It does not matter nearly as much in the regular season as it does in these playoff moments. And, man, if you have the aspirations that the Boston Celtics have this season, I would think it's real early in the playoffs to kind of have that kind of attitude, right? Yep. Plenty more opportunities for you to prove yourself, Joe.
Yes, and as we discussed, too, for those who don't remember, last year, Boston 24th in clutch time net rating at about a negative 9.3. In the postseason, that was even worse at a negative 13.3. And since the All-Star break, that was at a negative 14.4. So, again, getting outscored by those numbers, 14.4, 9.3 per 100 possessions in clutch time, not very good. Now, let's hear from Joel Embiid, too, because yesterday, I think a lot of people – I didn't want to get into this. I was on with Greg Peterson yesterday, and I brought up the fact that I don't think that having Embiid on the floor makes them easier to guard, but it does allow Boston to kind of do what we're talking about, right? Just put their big on him, and then just everybody else play man up defense. And there's more intricacies to that, but it's a really simplistic way to put it. But I think a lot of people will talk about, hey, Joel Embiid coming off of injury, had a quiet game, maybe that's it. Here's Embiid after the game on the injury.
There's no excuses. I'm out here, so I'm good. I'm good to play. We just gotta be better as a team. Like I said, we didn't execute what we were supposed to do, and they played freely all night. They got whatever they wanted. As far as me, like I said, I'm good.
Yeah, it was pretty shocking to see how poorly the 76ers played defensively in this game. When you look at the half-court offensive rating for Boston, averaged 1.2 points per play in half-court settings. Actually didn't do that well in transition, which you think is something you want to do against Philly. But I as we move forward in this series, again, I'm not in the best place considering I had under 5.5 games, and my thought was that Boston would win the first two at home. But I don't think it's very unrealistic as you look at where the series is at now that this thing still continues to be one that, hey, I wouldn't be shocked if the Celtics rip off three more wins consecutively and end this thing in five. It's the reason why I bet the series under the total games. You see there, kind of up against it myself from a probability standpoint. Got a good number, a closing line value, right? Got plus 120, ended up closing like minus, I think, 125 or so. But the Celtics do have their work ahead of them if they want to get that done. But the series winner at minus 230. We'll have more on series prices as we come back here in about 15 minutes or so. But the Celtics are a minus 230 favorite. And the last note on this game, because I wanted to bring up the total really quickly, this is why I think paying attention to pace of play really does matter. But sometimes it's a little overvalued, right? Sometimes we think that, hey, just because a game is quick, you're going to get a game that tends to go over, but you can have fast games that are extremely inefficient. We're looking at you, Detroit Pistons, throughout the end of the regular season. But you can have some of these games where you look at game one, and that game had 89 total possessions for the Philadelphia 76ers, and it's something that Kelly and I discussed on the Harvard Handicappers podcast yesterday, which is, all right, you're probably going to get this slow pace yet again. The question is just, is there going to be a dip in efficiency? Would both teams average nearly 1.27 points per possession in that game, and sure enough, that efficiency dips off. It was only on one side, but you get that dip, and this thing crashes down in terms of the total pre-flop and comes well under the total, and it's an angle to watch as you kind of move forward throughout these series and those ebbs and flows, because the interesting part is the market does adjust those totals. That was a big reason why you bet that thing under yesterday, right? Because the first total was 214.5, readjust over to 218.5, right? I think you had 218.5, didn't you?
219.
210.5. See, okay, so it even opened higher, but that's an adjustment you probably shouldn't make because of an outlier shooting performance. With that, two notes from last night really quickly. Every day I feel older and older. I have powered through Vegas Golden Knights and the Edmonton Oilers. Not that it was a bad game. It's just that I'm old and I wake up at 4, and yeah. By the time like 9 o'clock hits, I'm like, man. And my wife's like, you want to go to bed? I'm like, I do. I really do, but I can't. So
I have to watch sports.
I have to do this. You know, I was actually at a setting yesterday. I took my kid to soccer yesterday. And I explained to somebody what my job was, and like, because they're like, oh, you're here at soccer today. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, there's only one NBA game. I can rewatch it later tonight. And they looked at me like, what do you mean you can rewatch it later? You have to do those sort of things. This is what the job entails. But 6-4 Golden Knights over the Edmonton Oilers. You kind of saw a theme yesterday, more rested teams yesterday in both Carolina and Vegas get a victory on their home ice. So we'll see if that's a trend. But I mentioned advanced metrics, and I think it ties into both of these games. But, like, for example, in this one, Edmonton wins the shot share, Corsi 4 percentage, 55.6 for them, and generated more high danger chances. But those expected goal metrics really were in favor of the Golden Knights, and they deserved it. And I think, too, at the end of the – was it the first period? That weird goal that they let up that bounces off the back. So you kind of expected that. But with this Carolina and New Jersey matchup, be very interested to see what Jonathan Davis thinks about it. Because when you go to that one, you have a 5-1 final, right? Carolina been off since Friday. Makes a lot of sense. But the shot share was even split between these two. New Jersey had more high danger chances, actually won the expected goals for. So you wonder if maybe it's a time after a 7-game series, tough spot in game one, maybe come back to back New Jersey for the series as we move forward. But we'll talk about that coming up in 15. When we return, let's talk about some of these series prices and why I'm all in. Denver, sweep them out of here, baby. Let's get this thing done. It's a numbers game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
The Sports Betting Network.
It's time to download Nevada's premier sports betting app at MGM Sports. BetMGM has all your favorite wagering options, along with in-game betting, boosted odds specials, and way more. Download the BetMGM app today. Stop by any MGM casino on the Strip with your state-issued ID to open an account and start placing sports bets from anywhere in Nevada. Whatever your sport, whatever your betting style, you're going to love BetMGM's state-of-the-art technology and fan-friendly specials every day of the week. Visit BetMGM for terms and conditions. Got to be 21 or older, physically located in Nevada. Please gamble responsibly. If you have a gambling problem, 1-800-522-4700 is the number. You're just tuning in here on A Numbers Game. You're like, wow, that's kind of a husky and mysterious voice. That's not Gil Alexander. I'm Jonathan Von Tobel filling in for today and tomorrow. Kelly Bidlin's still here, so the Numbers Game crew still intact. Social question. I have plans later today.
Ooh, okay.
I'm going to a dog's birthday.
Oh, my God.
Now, here's the thing.
I love this topic. Let's go.
Okay, here's
what do you got?
I have two things on it. First,
do you have
off,
to bring a gift?
That's the main question. Do I stop by like a high scale puppy bakery and just grab like some of those like cheap treats you can throw into a bag?
Yeah.
And like bring it. Because here's the thing, I'm not sure how it works. First off, I've been told there's an open bar. So.
Oh, okay. All right. See, I was gonna say bring a bottle of booze.
So there's an open bar and it's during Lakers Warriors. So like I'm actually very excited for it because those two things are a great combination.
Right. Yeah.
But I just don't know.
I was laughing at first. Maybe I want to come now. Right. Plus one.
So do I bring like a bag of doggy treats to? I will say, dare I say, a very famous sports betting personality's dog. So this might give away who it is for some who actually keep track on social media. Do I bring a bag of treats?
Yeah, I think I know who you're going with here. Yeah. Rob Moreno just told me they make dog beer.
Get out of here, really?
Yeah, apparently.
Can I get that? Ask Rob. Can I get that easily? Like, can I?
Rob said he'll go
that
out and get it for you right now.
Okay. All right. Does it get them drunk?
I don't know.
Or is it just like a taste thing? Because that'd be awesome.
I will look it up. I think the open bar thing really does throw it off. Every party, I don't care what it's for. My answer is always bring a bottle of booze. Because worst case, guess what? People usually drink it. Worst case, you end up drinking it. So whatever. You know, if the party's terrible, you end up drinking your own bottle of booze.
Yeah.
Fine, whatever. But yeah, open bar really throws that off, man. I think you got to. I think you got to make a stop at some kind of dog shop.
I think I was. I think I will.
Some toy or something.
Yeah. I don't know if he's a toy guy. He's a very spoiled dog from what I can tell on social media. So I don't know if I want to give him that. The other question now, because it's an open bar, my wife is a fan of, at places with open bars, making sure the bartender sees a large tip at the beginning of the night so that they'll take care of you. But my thing for her is, like, I don't think they'll remember because they're so busy. But do you go large tip at the beginning so that they'll serve you nicely?
So by remember you, that means so, like...
Like, hey, that person gave me $30 bucks at the stop.
They see you approaching, they start making your drink already and stuff.
Or pour it a little heavier.
Yes, I usually do that. Okay, I usually do that.
All right. Just want to make sure. Yeah, dog birthday at a restaurant. I don't know if the dog's going to be there.
At a restaurant, dude?
Yeah. Like, I don't... Like,
I was just wondering why they're having an open bar. Now that makes more sense because it's at a restaurant.
Lifestyles of the rich and famous, man. They'll never understand.
Man.
Bought my dog a
JVT
cake once.
JVT in the Vegas Elite.
That's what I do, man. That's what I do. I gotta rub elbows with all these great people. All right, so...
Wait, do you have a dog?
I know. Like,
that's what I was going to say. You don't even have a dog.
No, used to, but now, you know, since we got kids, we didn't feel like we would give her the life she deserves, so my best friend now has the dog.
Oh, okay.
So, like, I've had a dog before, and I grew up with dogs. So, like, I've thrown a dog birthday myself, but it's not one where I've invited people. Like, I've gone to go get a dog cake and just gave it to my dog. Right, I have a picture on my phone of it, but, like...
A whole party is... that's a little next level. Yeah,
right.
Yeah. Especially when you're inviting people who don't have dogs, right?
I feel like we're just showing off maybe a little bit on the... Like, hey, this is what I can do for my dog.
Oh, that's great.
I would never even do that for my own kids. All right, so we have... let's pay off the tees. So Denver and Phoenix, of course... this weird part of the NBA schedule where you and I were both celebrating, like, cool, it is nice that we get one game a night. But at the same time, it is a little weird when you get all these days off in between games and you're changing settings, but gives the teams a chance to get rested and ready to go. So I mentioned Denver and Phoenix. So, look, as somebody who, in this series, before it started, you and I both, Kelly, have a series bet on the Denver Nuggets. They are now -450 to win this thing as they head back to Phoenix to take on the Suns. Part of that, like, -450 for anybody's out there is like, weren't they, like, underdogs to start the series, then they're up 2-0 going back. Yes, but Chris Paul's injury is very much factored into that number.
Yeah.
And this is why it was one of the big topics on our podcast yesterday. I'm all in on the Nuggets ending this thing pretty quickly. And the market kind of, it's so funny how the market gets a little stubborn at times when it comes to its rating of these teams. You saw this open at, I think, almost like 5.5 in favor of the Phoenix Suns for game 3. And it's like, that's not a number that says that Chris Paul's not playing.
Mm-hmm.
This is like something that doesn't really make much sense. So I'm in on the Nuggets money line for game 3. And I think that this thing's going to end relatively quickly. And it's not a slight against Kevin Durant or Devin Booker. And there is certainly a reality in which these two guys come out, go absolutely nuclear, hit every single mid-range attempt available to them, win a game, avoid a sweep, and, of course, are eliminated maybe, you know, in a few games. Heck, maybe there is a universe in which they just get insanely hot for 4 straight games and end up winning this series. I don't want to say that this is over by any stretch, but when you're talking about a Phoenix Suns team that was already precariously thin heading into this series, that needed Kevin Durant and Devin Booker to average over 40 minutes and 30 points per game, and that still was not enough to win either one of those games out there in Denver, and now your point guard position is an absolute nightmare. I'm like, Campaign's a fine player. He had that great bubble run, and he got a job out of it with the Phoenix Suns. But that's not the thing that's going to push you past here. And when you're asking so much of these guys, now even more without Chris Paul out there. And by the way, DeAndre Ayton defensively just doesn't have it against Jokic.
Nope.
So you all these things together, Kelly, like, I think this thing ends pretty quickly. I think we're talking 4 or 5 games.
Yeah, you and I hit on it yesterday on the podcast, but this you and I both have Nuggets series prices in pocket already. If I didn't, I think betting that Denver 4-0 and 4-1 is the way I would attack it. And you're getting then, you know, around a little bit better price than what we have essentially with those two bets in pocket. But I struggle to believe that they're not going to at least win one game in Phoenix and then sets you up at least for a game 5 back at home to close it out. The Chris Paul thing was interesting because you're right. The game line moved about a point, you know, point and a half based off his news. The series price moved like 50 cents. And the one thing though I'll bring up, you know, as far as that goes is, like you're talking about, Cameron Payne, he's fine. but it's just the entirety of the role players for the Suns and their bench, right? Like, it's so weak, and we've brought it up so many times on the pod. Download it wherever podcasts can be found. Hardwood Handicappers, me and JVT.
Along with all of our other VSiN podcasts.
That's right. That's right. But the, you know, that depth is such an issue that even though Chris Paul is declining in his career, not having him on the court is still such a big loss because they just don't have those bodies to replace these guys with. So yeah, I'm with you, man. I think this ends pretty quickly. I think we're looking at 4 or 5 games.
And this is the sneaky, sexy part about what the Denver Nuggets have done in this postseason. And some of it is a symptom of the opponents that they're playing. As we know, Naz Reid, Jaden McDaniels, not available for the Minnesota Timberwolves in their series in the first round. We see what's happening with the Phoenix Suns bench, where you need 44-plus minutes from each of your stars to get past a Clippers team that didn't have Kawhi Leonard or Paul George for a vast majority of that series. With Nikola Jokic off the floor in this postseason, the Nuggets have outscored their opponents by 27.6 points per 100 possessions. That is an incredible net rating, and that's going to continue in terms of an edge here. And you would think, too, Denver probably smells blood in the water, not only because you're up 2-0, but the way that this is breaking down and what seems to be potentially a long series on the other side of the bracket in Los Angeles and Golden State, you saw exactly what happened when you have a rest advantage, both in the NBA. We'll circle Philadelphia in game one of that Boston Celtics series, had 8 days off to rest, relax, go to Vegas, get a room at the Borgata, hang out, and get ready for the Celtics. James Harden, looking at you. And we also saw it yesterday in the NHL, what rest can do. So Denver wants to end this thing quickly and watch the Lakers and the Warriors beat the crap out of each other for 6 or 7 games and then get well-rested and ready to go back at home for whoever's going to take them on. So the Nuggets series price, I think it's getting priced out right. Chris Paul's priced into that thing now. The lead is priced into that thing now. The market has adjusted off of its highs for the Phoenix Suns, but very much worth mentioning that massive price and why it is that way, despite the fact that you have the Suns going back home. Now, as far as the other series prices are concerned, I would go to Heat and Knicks really quickly. Heat -115, Knicks -105. These numbers courtesy of DraftKings. And just really quickly noting that, like, this one has, out of all of these, the most noise in it, right? Because you just don't know what the status of Jimmy Butler is going to be by the time you get to game 3 over in Miami on Saturday. You could come in and think that the Heat coming back home are going to win both of those games, and you could bet -115. But should Jimmy Butler get ruled out, that not only affects that game 3 line, but more than likely, the Knicks are going to flip to the series favorite, I would think, if Butler is not available for game 3. What do we think? It's probably like a flip of just -115 to -105, like the other way around for the series price. But Butler's presence or lack thereof does create a lot of noise here. And sometimes it's the boring answer, but you really don't see a lot here when it comes to these series prices other than, and we'll get to this series, of course, because they play tonight, the Golden State Warriors. If you were somebody who believed that the Warriors were in a good spot to win the series but didn't want to back them because of the scheduling situation in game 1, which came to fruition, and they end up losing that game outright. Warriors +145, which, of course, Lakers lead that thing 1-0.
Yes.
All right. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, I think we probably, if you were interested in getting in on the Celtics, you probably missed your good opportunity before that last game last night. And Heat Knicks, yeah, we've talked about it a lot, but this is so injury-dependent, it's hard to really go any direction right now.
Jonathan Davis, SiriusXM, NHL, joins us next here on The Numbers Game.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Great time of year, a lot to bet on in the next 30 days, and for a limited time, you can subscribe to VSiN for only $9.99. That word was subscribe. I tried to get through it. It gets insights into daily baseball best bets from Adam Burke, NBA and NHL playoff write-ups, VSiN's Kentucky Derby betting guide. That is out now. Make sure you check that out. The most exciting 2 minutes of sports coming up on Saturday. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get access to our daily recap of the top plays via VSiN show hosts and guests as well, plus tools like betting splits, prop analyzers, which are a lot of fun too, especially in these NBA postseason series, and a top experts leaderboard here at VSiN for betting records, profit, ROI, and more. Sign up now, $9.99 at VSiN.com/subscribe. Always want to stress that entails everything that we do here at the network. So $9.99 for a month, and it gets you in on every single thing that is up on that website that we have to offer. Okay, with that, let's welcome in our next guest, Jonathan Davis, host of Ice Cap SiriusXM NHL, host of the Show Me the Money Hockey Betting Podcast as well, West Coast HKY up on Twitter. It's early, I apologize. Jonathan, good name, by the way. I think I've always told you this, but Jonathan to Jonathan, and you spell it right, very, very solid first name. So let's start with a little bit from what we saw yesterday. And I wanted to ask you, because, you know, somebody who covers the NBA, don't get to watch a lot of night-to-night hockey. So last night was one of the first few nights of the playoffs. I got to sat down and watch a lot of stuff, and especially when it came to Vegas and Edmonton. And I wanted to start there. When you looked at what transpired yesterday between Vegas and Edmonton, you know, I was kind of looking around, and the one blemish I could kind of find for the Golden Knights from there yesterday is 2 of 3 on power plays for the Edmonton Oilers. Is that something that's going to maybe hamper the Vegas Golden Knights as they move forward in the series? Their power plays weren't very great in terms of killing those opportunities for Edmonton.
Yeah, and Jonathan, it was that way in round number one. I mean, yep. Their success rate on the power play was killing penalties was 59%. That's way too low. You need to be really closer to – you need to be in the 80s, maybe the high 70s. So, yeah, and you've got an Edmonton Oilers team that was at a success rate of 56% in round one. So Vegas has got to stay out of the box, absolutely. But, yeah, look, last night was – look, I'm one of the guys. I picked the Edmonton Oilers in this series, and it's far from over. But it really just goes to show that I just think that, you know, the Vegas Golden Knights have probably been the least respected conference winner in any sport in quite some time. I mean, you know, they didn't have a 30-goal score this year, which is something that, you know, you measure most teams by. But the collective group has been really good, and they've played so well and so well defensively under Bruce Cassidy. Now, yes, they gave up 4 last night, but they are a very, very good team. But yes, they do have to avoid going to the penalty box, because that power play in Edmonton is absolutely lethal.
So when it comes to Edmonton too, because you're not the only person that I've heard kind of sing the praises of Edmonton at the end of the regular season, heading into the postseason as one of these dangerous teams. But going back to the series with Los Angeles, this first game against Vegas, you're seeing a lot of high scoring games. Opponents are having some offensive success. I figure this is kind of a problem, right? Is this goaltending? Is this defense? I feel like at some point you got to buckle down here, and you can't be giving up on average 3 goals a night.
Well, in the case of Edmonton, it's kind of hard to stop them. I mean, you know, Edmonton's got what we call the German Gretzky and Leon Draisaitl. And last night, you know, his performance, 4 goals, Jonathan, I would equate that to putting 60 up in a basketball game. I mean, you just don't see it. Now, we have seen it in back-to-back nights, and that's been unbelievable to see. I mean, that's just alarming that we haven't had 4 goals. It's so rare to see 4 goals. But yeah, I mean, look, what Vegas really prided themselves on was, look, they did a great job of shutting down Winnipeg, but this is a totally different beast with the Edmonton Oilers. And saying that, you know, you look at all their games during the regular season, I think they had 3-4-3 games, the Oilers winning 2 of the 3, and then 1-7-4 game that Edmonton won in Vegas at the end of the year. So we're going to see goals. So from a betting standpoint, if I haven't taken a look yet for what the line is for game 2, but if there's a 6.5 out there, you better grab it now.
Yeah, I think right now for game 2, at least over at DraftKings and other spots, we're talking about 6.5. Shaded to the over at -125, at least currently, for that matchup on Saturday. All right, let's go to the other result we had yesterday then, Jonathan, before we get to the bets that you have for the 2 series we'll see later tonight. Carolina, a lot of rest. Austin's Friday. I got to talk about this yesterday when I was filling in on the Lombardi line, and sure enough, they get a 5-1 win. If you are somebody that liked Jersey in this series, but the situation wasn't the best for them, considering they only had 1 day of rest coming into this series, is this an opportunity now to come in? Because if you look at some of the shot share numbers, it was 50-50. They had more high danger chances. The expected goal metrics had this in favor of the Devils. Is this a series where you can come in and back New Jersey to win this thing now that they're down 1-0?
Well, I think so. I mean, look, I have New Jersey. I played New Jersey in 5 and New Jersey in 6, pre-flop. I'll still jump on New Jersey. I'll be honest with you, JVT. I mean, this is the series that I have the least interest in. I love the Carolina coach, Rod Brind'Amour. JVT, he could beat the snot out of both of us still. I mean, the guy is built like he's built like a Mack truck. And that's the way his team plays. They're just not very exciting to watch, but defensively, they do a great job of shutting teams down. In saying that, you know, I wouldn't worry about this New Jersey team. We saw them get off to a slow start against the Rangers. To me, they are the more talented team. They match up in a lot of ways. I think they've got the matchups against Carolina, like those numbers showed last night. I'm not worried about game 1. And we've seen the success of road teams in the playoffs. It's now, 33-21, I believe, after last night with both home teams winning. I would definitely jump on New Jersey in game number two.
All right, let's go to Leafs and Panthers game two. I'll just ask this non-number question, and you could take this into your play for tonight. Is there a letdown almost to a certain extent where, like, for some reason my Twitter feed has devolved into a lot of Toronto people, and I don't know how that happened, but, like, it felt like it was almost like winning the Super Bowl, getting out of that first round. Like, that was like, finally, we did it. Okay, now whatever happens, happens. And it seemed like that in game one. What's the bounce back like here in game two?
Well, JVT, Toronto people are everywhere. I mean, I was raised there, and Leaf fans, Leaf Nation is kind of like, you know, Yankee fans, Cowboy fans. They're like cockroaches. They just keep coming at you. I think there is a bounce back from Toronto. I think this is a 6-game series. I think Florida wins it. I think there could have been a letdown, after, you know, finally getting over that 19-year hump of not getting out of the first round. I would look to play Toronto in this one in game two, simply because, I think it's a 6-game series. I don't care how you get there. I just don't see the Leafs getting swept, and I see them defending home ice tonight.
In terms of where we're at for this as well, because I think, did you have Florida in 6 and in 7? So this is a good start for you in this series.
Yeah, I did. I absolutely did. I just think, like, I like the way Florida plays. You know, they're led by Matthew Tkachuk, who, you know, Connor McDavid has already won the MVP. I mean, it's not a race. You know, that race was over in January, so we'll see when the ballots come out. But I think when you see the ballots come out, Matthew Tkachuk from the Florida Panthers, I think, will be number two on most people's ballots. He was great in game one. There's a nastiness to this Florida team that I just still think that Toronto just doesn't have. You know, I think they're a team that is built more for the regular season than they are for the playoffs. And if they keep getting the goaltending from Sergei Bobrovsky, who's had a renaissance, kind of like he did when when he was playing for Columbus and they knocked out Tampa, you know, 5 years ago. You know, he did it to Boston. He's doing it to Toronto right now. I really do like Florida in this series.
All right, game two, Dallas and Seattle. Not often that you get 4 goals from Joe Pavelski and you lose a game. That's exactly what happened in game one. Kraken right now find themselves plus 165 underdogs thereabouts, minus 195 or as high as minus 210 as you see the screen right there if you're watching up at VSiN.com. What do you make of this bounce back here for Dallas against the upstart Kraken that have some VGK vibes from their first year in the league?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think Dallas is the better team, but, you know, I've been a huge, huge Seattle supporter. Look, the value is there with Seattle. No question about it. I just don't see Dallas losing 2 at home. These two teams play tight games during the regular season. They had two of their 3 games in the regular season went to overtime. But I do see a bounce back from Dallas in saying that. I mean, look, the way Seattle approaches things, you know, they had 15 players that scored goals in round number one. In game number one in this series, they had 5 different goal scorers for their 5 goals. They had 11 different players with points. It is truly a team. And so they make it tough for you. I just see that, you know, Dallas, I really like the way that they came back, obviously. I thought they had a good start in overtime. It was a fortuitous goal by Yanni Gourde to win it. Here's the thing with the Kraken that's different from what Vegas did in year one. I mean, the Kraken are a team that have 7 players that have been to the Stanley Cup final in their history. So, you know, and for them this year, guys, together, you know, the big thing for Seattle is, you know, their year one, they were still dealing with a lot of the issues of COVID. They never got a chance to really get to know each other. And, you know, I was told back in January, right from the start this year, that's been a big thing. This is truly a group of guys that now know each other, really like each other. They play hard for each other.
Jonathan, we are up against it, but thank you very much, sir, for the time. We appreciate it. Have a good one and good luck tonight.
You as well, JVT. Thanks for having me, guys.
Appreciate it. Again, West Coast HKY up on Twitter, West Coast Hockey. You learn something new every day.
There you go.
That I know that in the impending nuclear war, cockroaches would survive, right? That's the thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now Torontans, I guess, are the other thing that would survive. Considering that I'm not the one that likened them to cockroaches. I'm just saying.
Someone going to post a prop tonight of does a team have a player that scores 4 goals and lose? Because that's happened 2 nights in a row now.
All right, we'll come back. The hottest bettor in sports. Kelly and I might have cooled him down. We'll tell you about that when we return.
Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
BetMGM, an authorized gaming partner of the NBA, hits the court with a special playoff parlay insurance offer. Place a one-game parlay of four legs or more. Get back a bonus bet up to $25 if you miss one leg. Enjoy the playoffs like never before with BetMGM's daily promotions, boosted odds specials, and parlay selection features throughout the postseason. Log in now or sign up, opt in, get a $25 bonus bet if one leg in your one-game parlay falls short. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. Visit BetMGM.com for terms. Got to be 21, new and existing customer offer. All promotions subject to qualification and eligibility requirements. Rewards are issued as non-withdrawable bonus bets, which expire 7 days from issuance. Please gamble responsibly. And if you have a gambling problem, 1-800-GAMBLER is the number. Offer not available in Washington, D.C., Mississippi, Nevada, and New York. Jonathan Von Tobel here filling in for Gil Alexander. I'll also be along tomorrow. Kelly Bidlin is in his usual spot here on A Numbers Game. So, I mentioned that we might have cooled down the hottest bettor on the planet. This is, I think, a really fascinating story. And I think there's a lot of ripple effects to a story like this. Because, one, it's fun. And it involves, I think, Kelly, you put it really well when we were talking about it off the air, arguably the most popular basketball player on the face of the planet. And no, it's not Steph Curry or LeBron James. It's Charles Barkley. So Charles Barkley and the TNT crew have a promotion that they do. They are sponsored by FanDuel. And so he will have his, I think they call it like Chuck versus America, okay? And I don't know who he's versing because I haven't seen anybody go against it. You know, really want to go against the same game parlay with a plus 5-1 odds or whatever. Plus 5-1, sorry. I know Kay Adams got in trouble for mislabeling stuff. It's a slip of the tongue, you know, plus 500. So anyway, this is Charles Barkley's same game parlay from last night. And we will tell you why we're talking about this momentarily. So Jaylen Brown, 25 more points, hits that, but three of the four legs loses. So you'll see there, the odds for Chuck's same-game parlay yesterday were plus 493. Now, why are we talking about this? Because we want to attract your eyes to the bottom of the screen. Chuck's overall record with these same-game parlays, 14-20. He's on a five-game losing streak. So let's do a little math. It's a numbers game, right? Yep.
Do a little math.
What's 20 minus 5? It's 15. So at one point, Charles Barkley, with these same game parlays, was 14-15. Now, this is the fascinating part about it, right? You and I have both been watching this.
Yes.
Every time I've seen one of these parlays, it has been no shorter than about like 4-1 in terms of the odds.
Me either. I haven't seen one shorter than that either.
And there were questions about, okay, well, maybe they're not grading the record properly. Well, no, because he's on a five-game losing streak. They've had five broadcasts. He's lost five straight same-game parlays. That has just accounted for one loss to his record. So if they're grading these properly, which it seems like they are, Charles Barkley at one point was 14-15 on same-game parlays with the odds at about, we'll say conservatively, at 4-1. That is bleeping ridiculous. And it has not been a topic at all. And it was one of those things where you and I both, like, I kind of showed you a picture. I was like, did you realize that Charles Barkley's kind of like maybe slowly killing it with some of these same game parlays? So just that alone, the fact that this hasn't caught on, I think is absolutely incredible.
This has been a Hardwood Handicapper's deep dive investigation. Yes, you brought this up to me one day, like, what, 2 months ago this at this
is,
point?
You know what this is good for? Our friends over at Meadowlark, we had Tom Hammerstraw on the other day, their basketball Illuminati thing. Like, this is it.
Yes,
dive into it. Give me some of the old parlays. This is insane that he was operating at this clip.
It really is. I mean, you brought this up to me probably 2 months ago, and my instant reaction was, oh, my God, you've noticed this too? Because I've only, like, you know, during the regular season, it's okay, maybe I didn't catch every single one of them, but I caught a lot of them, right? So you know, through the season, I'm trying to figure out, okay, is this grading? Are they grading this properly for a sports bettor, or are they maybe grading legs or something?
Yeah, there were some thought that people, right? There were some people on Twitter who thought, hey, maybe they're just grading each leg one by one. So, like in this example, if he went 1-3 on the same game parlay, they put 1-3 on his record. But clearly, that's not the case.
Yeah. So going back about 2 months, me and you have actually been like tracking these pretty much every time they do them now, because it was 14. If he was 14-15, he's lost five in a row. But yeah, use 4-1 as base math. Like, you're still talking, this guy is conservatively, JVT, up like 40 units on the NBA season.
And I know, because we like to get angry, right? So this is not a call to start tailing Charles Barkley on his part.
Not at all.
No. It's a fascinating thing for multiple perspectives. One, that Charles Barkley, I mean, look, I think he's considered like a lovable loser, right?
Right,
like,
yes.
People like to laugh whenever he makes one of his guarantees, and the joke is, all right, go the opposite way. That hasn't been the case for these same game parlays. And I think Gil says this all the time, right? It's like sports bettors were like too close to the sun.
Yes, yes.
So like for us, I'm looking at this and going, why aren't you talking about this? And you pointed out, like Shaq and Kenny, and like they're giving him crap for the record.
Yeah, they'll like rip on him for the record. Yeah, they'll rip on him for the record sometimes. They're like, hey, at 4-1, are you kidding me? I would kill to have this kind of record.
So I think it speaks. I think it's fascinating too, because not only is it a guy who's like red hot on something that's completely unsustainable, but it also speaks to, as sports gambling becomes more and more mainstream, and you see it more and more in the mainstream, but you still have this disconnect of the mainstream not really knowing how to handle stories like this. Every single day, NBA on TNT should be like, Chuckster's up nearly 6,000, whatever it is, right? Yeah, like, yeah. They should be all over this. But instead, there's a sense of maybe not knowing how to, like, properly equate this because they just see a losing record and not realize that he's up. But you know what the surprising thing to me is, and I think that you and I have discussed this, Barkley's a gambler.
Mm-hmm.
I would think that maybe he understands that even though the record was under 500 by just a single game, that he was like lighting
the big
world
for the year.
He
yeah.
was lighting the money, like lighting the world on fire.
The other thing that's blowing me away about this, like when you and I were trying to dig into this more, like there's a Twitter account for everything on this planet, right? Like there's a Greg Peterson Twitter tracker out there, for Christ's sake. Like there's somehow not a Charles Barkley like tracking account or something.
Right.
That's where like we've reached out to inside the NBA people.
I've tried to journalism. It's not working. Nobody's getting back to me.
We've tried to journalism this thing. This is the best we can come up with, is that what we are seeing on a night-to-night basis is completely accurate with this record, and how is this not a bigger deal?
It's incredible. So, and then I mentioned too.
Go get him, Chuck.
Right, go get him. Well, but that's why I teased too. We might have cooled him down, because since we've really started to bring this topic up, he's absolutely lost it, and it does speak to like the nature of just these same game parlays and how tough this is, really, to play these consistently. It's why they want you to. It's why they're promoted. But I thought this was one of the better sports betting stories out there. The fact that Charles Barkley had been absolutely destroying same game parlays for a minute and nobody really wanted to talk about it. So kudos to Charles Barkley. Hopefully he picks this back up, and hopefully TNT kind of catches on and it's like, hey, maybe we should start like talking about how good he is at this thing. Cause the bit I get, but
yeah. What they're missing is that you need to include the units won or so, you know, with that record. Right. Yeah. And I'll give props to ESPN. They do what is it, like the midday sports center? They do like a home run prop, like where they pick everybody picks someone to hit a home run that day.
Okay.
And they track the units one.
Yeah.
So they're actually they're doing a good job with that. But it's like you said, the mainstream media still learning, you know, how to do all this stuff. That's the part that's really missing.
Yep. Yes, indeed. All right. So with that, Raheem Palmer is going to be with us coming up in about 8 minutes from The Ringer. We'll get his thoughts overall on everything when it comes to some of these series. But I know that you wanted to talk about some of these awards because, as I mentioned, a lot of people like to get mad. A lot of people got mad last year because the Eastern and Western Conference Finals now have MVP trophies to be handed out, which means that you can bet on those things. You can also bet, of course, on the Finals MVP, as we normally do. But it's not the same tact. Like, a lot of people, once the postseason is set, you will try to find a futures ticket on a team by betting a player to win Super Bowl MVP. You know, I tried to attack it with, like, Brandon Ayuk for the San Francisco 49ers, for example, at, like, a nearly 200-1 in this last postseason. I feel like it's not the same when it comes to the NBA. Although I will say this, Kelly, as we're kind of looking around and you're seeing the way that this market is shaping up and how the bracket is shaping up, if you're looking around and you're going, okay, like, for example, the Miami Heat, I think this is the one team you could really tie this into.
Yeah, there's right? one other I have in mind, but
okay.
Yeah.
Okay, I had two, too, so we'll see if we're in lock and step here. But clearly, it's Kyle Lowry. No, it's Jimmy Butler. Right?
Kevin Love, have you seen those outlet passes?
No, so clearly, if you're somebody who wants to, like, get in on Miami, but the value is gone, you're looking at, like, Jimmy Butler Finals MVP. He's at about, like, 35-1. You can also go, if you want, again, cut it in half, Eastern Conference ticket, Jimmy Butler to win that at 7-1. But I think like that's the way to attack it. My other was
so right here, I think this is what you're talking about. Like, this is a way to approach team futures betting where you can possibly get a better number, right? So there, in the example of the Miami Heat, is that okay, if the Heat are going to win the Eastern Conference, who's winning this award? There's only one player who's winning this award. It's Jimmy Butler, right? So that's why we see the same exact number, 7-1 for the Heat to win the East, 7-1 for him to win Eastern Conference Player of the Year. Now go to the Western Conference. I think there's a couple teams that you could say the same thing about. Nuggets with Jokic, Warriors with Curry, and maybe that one gets a little murkier. I think Nuggets with Jokic is probably a better one. But like that one, there's a little bit of value, right? You have the Nuggets currently at plus 130 to win the West. Jokic to win Western Conference Finals MVP at plus 155. If I was choosing to bet a future right now on the Nuggets, I would probably play a little bit of both of those.
Yeah, I actually think I would disagree a little bit. I think Curry, because he's kind of been a one-man army and their bench has been so bad, that there's a little bit more of, if they're having success, it's Steph Curry that's winning those awards. And I don't think there's really
It works for both. Yeah. I think it works for both. And there's look, see, you're getting plus 380 on Steph. Warriors are plus 350.
All right, we'll take our break here. Second hour of a numbers game on the way. Raheem Palmer joins us, host of The Ringer. He's a Philly guy. Let's get his thoughts on what's going on with the 76ers when we come back.